This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Chris Buckley, Business Director at Vineworks.
Hi, Chris.
One of your roles at Vineworks is helping vineyards establish.
Correct.
And one of the things we've been looking at last week was how to set yourself up and establish a vineyard for yourself or whatever it is that you're looking to do. Last week we talked about site selection.
Yes, and finding that piece of land.
Finding that piece of land and what the properties were that we're looking for.
Yes.
And they were, just a summary?
Some sort of south-facing aspect, a gentle slope for cold air and kind of excessive water drainage, a good draining field, good access, good level of shelter, so protection from the wind, ideally kind of under 100 metres above mean sea level.
Yeah, and that's what you want in the UK, and we mentioned last week that different places in the world...
Different requirements.
...will have different requirements, yes. So if you're in the Douro Valley, facing the sun may not necessarily be the best thing. In fact, sometimes the vineyards are planted facing north, just because it just gives freshness to the wines. We've decided we want to grow a vineyard. We've looked around. We've had an agent help us find maybe a couple of options. What's the next step in terms of getting ready for purchasing the land? You know, how important is it to be in a particular location, for example?
Well, it depends on what your end game is. Obviously, if it's a sort of lifestyle project, if it's, you know, the vineyard is going to be where you're going to live, for example. But if you want to be close to existing kind of producers and growers, you would look for land kind of in those or kind of close proximity to where others are, per se. Once you've found that piece of land and you decided, you know, what it is you want to do kind of with the fruit, what the end business plan.
Is that where you're saying, oh, I'm planning on making steel wines, I'm going to make sparkling wines,
exactly.
I'm going to be a contract grower? Or
are you going to do a bit of both? You're kind of making those decisions. I mean, they're not set in stone, but it helps, you know, if you kind of make those decisions and work back from where you want to be. And depending on what it is you do, whether it's growing under contract or it's growing to have a product kind of vinified and made for you, that it will determine what it is that you kind of want to plant. And from that, we can help you with selecting different clones and ultimately matching the rootstocks to the soil and you know, the performance of the site. Once those decisions are all locked in, the next stage would be to order one of the first stages would be to order the vines.
Because you've got a lead time, a big lead time.
There is a lead time. So typically you're looking at 2 years from ordering to get a vine because they're grafted 18 months before you actually plant them. You can purchase vines that are kind of, I suppose, off the shelf, you know, pre-grafted. That's a very big market for that. But if what you're looking for is not readily available, then you would have to get that grafted by the nursery. So that's the first thing you need to do. That's the key thing that would slow down or kind of hold you to any particular date in terms of planting, really, is the availability of vines and, you know, what it is you're looking for. So that'd be the first thing that we would order on your behalf.
So once I've purchased my land,
yes,
and I know what I'm going to be doing, we decide on the grapes, the varieties, yes, and the clones and the rootstocks to match the soils. And then we put an order in for a nursery, and
once we're getting close to the preceding sort of summer, going into autumn, is when you would begin ground preparation for that planting in the following year.
Okay, so we've ordered it. We have to wait almost 6 months or a year before we can start ground preparation.
Yes, yeah. I mean, in some cases, you know, if you can purchase kind of off the shelf, it might speed up or expedite that process. But typically, if you worked on that scenario, that there's a significant lead time.
Mm.
So you've bought your land and you're going to prepare it. So you'd check that there was, you know, that you had all the necessary clearances in terms of, you know, kind of being able to plant a vineyard, you didn't need planning permissions.
Do you? Do you need planning?
Well, in some cases, yeah.
Terrible land and...
Well, it depends on the historic use of land, really. Agricultural land can be converted into viticulture with no permissions required. But if there's purchase a piece of land that's historically been permanent pasture, for instance, then you would need, you need to seek the help of a land agent or an advisor would be able to kind of take you through that that planning permission process. But saying you've got all those things in place and you're getting ready to plant, you would spray off your field. So you would kill off all the weeds. Mm-hmm. You would then make your amendments. So we talked previously about soil testing. So you would take your soil test. You would use an agronomist to kind of
An agronomist is
somebody who makes the kind of chemical and nutrient recommendations. It's an accredited profession. They help you kind of work out what it is you need to add in order to change pH levels or kind of compensate for kind of missing kind of macro and micronutrients.
What are the common things you'd add?
Things like kind of boron, potassium.
Why would you add boron or potassium?
Because they're used or they're kind of used by the vine quite considerably at various different stages in its kind of life cycle.
Yeah.
So you would add those ideally at pre-establishment along with any other kind of amendments.
And the reason you do it pre-establishment rather than just...
Having a young child, you want to give it, you know, all the best foods, the best conditions, the best environment for it to proliferate. The key time to do that is at establishment. And also pre-establishment, you haven't got all the infrastructure in place. So, you know, vines in the ground, trellising, it's much easier with very big bits of kit and big tractors to efficiently and cost-effectively spread these nutrients and to kind of make the amendments.
Yeah.
For example, putting compost down is a lot more cost-effective when you're broadcast applying it in an empty field versus, you know, spreading it under vine. Once the trellising and the vine is the vineyard's in situ.
Okay. Some of those nutrients, things like nitrogen, are very soluble. They, if you put them in a year ago early, they won't be there when you want it.
Very rarely add nitrogen. We're talking about UK viticulture. Nitrogen, we've got plenty of here.
Okay.
The soils are so fertile. It's the one thing that we're almost trying to rein back in, is that vigour, really. So kind of where we can, we would avoid adding kind of nitrogen.
Okay.
In terms of ground prep, after you've sprayed off your field, you've made your applications, you would then plough that in, and then you may well drill a cover crop that would sit there over kind of autumn and winter. So something kind of like mustard, for example.
Okay, and that's just to get some income.
You wouldn't necessarily harvest it. What you would do is it just gives it a bit of cover, so the ground is got cover on it over winter, so you wouldn't get any kind of erosion.
Okay.
It would also mean that what you would do is you'd fold it back in the spring, so you'd get, you know, organic matter back into the soil.
Oh, okay.
So going to spray off, make your additions, plough, potentially drill cover crop depending on the site and client preference. And then you'd leave that over winter for the frost to get in, you know, help break down that soil. And then in the spring you would subsoil. So you would get down to kind of half a meter with some tines and help break up that subsoil compaction.
Oh,
and that's another thing. We're going back talking to things that you can easily do pre and post vineyard. The subsoiling is the one thing that you do get kind of one shot at it to do. And doing it in a bare field is easier than doing it when you've got vines in situ, because you can go across diagonally, you can go up and down.
So what are you saying? You're saying tilling it, but really deep.
You're not really disturbing the surface. You're getting down with, you know, kind of 50 centimetres, 60 centimetres, and really kind of breaking up that.
Yep.
You've got the topsoil, which sits, you know, and it's typically a 30 centimetre band.
Yep.
But then beneath that is a much more kind of compacted mixture of sort of bedrock and you know, kind of compacted soil, and it's helped break up that, so when the vines go in, those roots have got, you know, gaps and avenues that they can just get going quicker. Yes. Rather than the root system hitting that sort of subsoil and it just splaying.
Yeah, Is it, I've seen some tractor implements a wee while ago. Is that where it's like almost like a blade going down and there's something
out? It's almost like a big knife. Yeah, you don't see much disturbance on the soil surface.
So you just get a little slit in the surface, then underneath it's just churning away.
Yeah, it's just, you know, helping to kind of break up. It's just, it's not, it's the horizon between the topsoil and the subsoil. It's, you know, where the two meet. That's what you want to break up. And then once that's broken up, it makes it so easier for the root systems to just get going and go deep and go searching for those nutrients and establish themselves. The first 2 to 3 years of a vine's life are so important, and establishing a well-established vine make for a much better vineyard, you know, 20, 25 years down the line. In those first few years, if it kind of a bumpy, compromised establishment, it can lead to...
It's almost like, I know this, plants almost have like a memory, don't they? Even if you've got something going on when it first starts, it's almost like epigenetics, and things switch on and switch off. Yeah. And the next thing you know, it's in this niche that isn't quite the niche that you want.
Yeah, exactly. It's anything that you can do to help that establishment process is,
Okay. So I've got
the effectively, you're kind of mincing up the soil, you know, creating a broad, a kind of blank palette to work with.
Yeah.
So in the spring, you would power harrow that. So that's smashing up the soil into like a fine tilth.
Yeah.
A bit like, you know, kind of if you're planting your potatoes or your carrots, you want a nice sort of fine-ish medium to work into. And the reason being for that is that when we plant, you want the trench, the hole that behind the plant goes into, to close easily. And with a fine tilth, it will all kind of just fall down and go around the roots and there won't be any air pockets.
Yeah.
At Vineworks, we typically, or kind of 90% of the planting we do is done by our vine planter. It's a GPS guidance driven machine planter. So we can get down, we have an accuracy of kind of 1 to 2 centimeters.
Yeah.
So we just set it, vine spacing and row widths. You can plant sort of 15, 20,000 vines a day.
Yep.
Using that piece of kit.
I saw Rathfinney plant theirs up. They didn't use Vineworks, they used some French firm.
German contractor, yeah.
Was it German? Yeah, and I remember watching it, and it is like literally they are so square, aren't they? And straight, and you just change the angle, and next thing, all the diagonals line up, and it looks great.
If you get the ground preparation right, and you create that lovely almost 30, 40 centimetres of tilth, that machine planting, when the vine goes in, those roots will just be upright. Yes. And therefore, they'll then be, you know, they won't...
Straight down.
Be straight down. Yeah.
Sam Doncaster was telling me, you know, if it goes in wrong and the roots are facing up, it's a disaster.
Yeah, absolutely. We do some hand planting as well, typically for kind of smaller sites where you'd use an auger.
Yeah. Auger just drills a hole.
It drills a hole. Again, there are some kind of risks to that, is that you're effectively kind of polishing the sides of a circle, so you end up with something, you know, that might be pot-bound potentially. Whether you're machine planting or you're hand planting, that ground preparation and having that blank canvas is key, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Okay. So let's talk about using GPS and a nice tractor, because it's more fun than doing it by hand. And I've seen one of these machines in operation, and they just, I can't remember, I don't think there was anybody physically putting it in the ground. They just seem to feed in and then close in.
It's a plough that goes through first, which creates the hole or the trench. Mm-hmm. And then there's a wheel, a bit like a kind of a like a cartwheel. And the guys on the back are feeding that wheel. So they'll place the vine into the arms of the wheel. The arms will go round, drop the vine in, release it. And then very closely behind that wheel is a set of tines that's just... that are facing each other, and they close that hole behind them. Complicated kit, but it's in essence very, very simple, but a very kind of sensitive tool.
Yes.
But it works fantastically well, and means what could take weeks, you know, using a team of people, you could get done in a day.
Yep. Okay, so the vines go in, and...
Vines go in. The next thing to do is to give it shelter. So you put a rod next to it, so a tutor. So it might be a metal rod.
Yep. Is that just banged in by hand?
You can just push it in with a hand, and then you put a grow tube on. So this gives you protection from rabbits or badgers or any other pests, but it also gives you a microclimate for the vine to start growing. So it gives you that bunce.
It's a little bit warmer.
Yeah, a little bit warmer.
Okay, and those tubes, I've only ever seen them, they're like green or white, aren't they?
Yeah.
Do they let the light in through them as well? Or is
Some have got perforated holes that might do that, but no, they normally not opaque, but they'll let a little bit of light in, but not massive.
It's not about the light; the light comes in from the top.
Yeah, and the kind of heat. Yeah, and they'll
get. Yeah. Okay, I haven't got any trellising or anything in place. I've just got a piece of steel.
Yeah, piece of steel is a tutor, and your tube.
What do you call it? A tutor.
A tutor. Yeah, a vine tutor or a vine rod.
And what do you tie the vine to, or is it just give it something to cling on to? It
supports the grow tube. Yep. In those first few months until the rest of the trellising goes up around it.
Yeah.
So you put those two things on first, and then the next job will be to build the trellising around it. So you put in your end posts mm-hmm. and your anchors, and then you put in your intermediate posts. So those are the posts which sit in the row.
Yeah.
And they're usually spaced sort of 6 meters or so apart. Once those are in place, you would then run your wires.
Yeah.
So typically in the UK, in our vertical shoot position system, we have a one routing wire, mm-hmm. Which is usually about 9 centimeters, a meter from the ground. And that's the wire that you would affix that metal tutor or rod that we talked about to. So there's a particular clip that you can get. And that creates a kind of a firm structure then. So your rod is nice and strong and it's attached to the trellising system.
And do you put the trellising system pretty much after the vineyard's been planted?
I mean, it doesn't have to go in straight away. The vines, in reality, won't really start using it until the following year. Because any growth in the first year, you will cut back. So even if the vine grows out of the tube 10 feet, you know, you would then over winter, you would take that back to two buds. So you're leaving something no more than an inch and a half sort of long.
Oh, okay.
So you do that to stimulate root growth.
Yeah.
So you remove all the growth from that season and you go back to two buds, and that helps stimulate the root growth.
Oh, really?
It's all about root growth in those first 2 years. If you can nail that down, like I said, your vineyard will establish really well that strong footing that you kind of talk about.
Oh, okay. I thought that first few years was that the first year was getting up to the wire, and then the second year was getting it onto there, and then the third year you got your fruit.
No, not in the UK, no. So, end of the first year goes back to two buds, and then the growth you get from that is a much stronger, thicker growth, and that becomes your trunk.
Okay.
So during that second season, the growth comes then and reaches top of the wire. You'll be selecting one of those canes to be your trunk.
Yeah.
So you would select one and you would top it at the end of the year two at the fruiting wire.
Okay.
And then from that, you go and get shoots which sprout from the side in year three.
Yeah.
And that's when you then start at the end of year three season in that year three, between year three and year four pruning, that's when you start to lay down your first cane. So whether it's a single gear or a double gear, and you start to get the traditional shape of a vine.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, I understand that. So let's just recap that.
Yep.
Your vine's in the ground. Yep. First year you get growth. You don't care about that growth. You cut it back because you want root establishment.
Exactly.
So you're almost back to where you were after the beginning of the first year when you first planted it, except for your roots are now maturing.
Yes.
And then the second year, it grows up to the fruiting wire.
You'll probably reach the top of the trellising wire, but you will be choosing the strongest looking, thickest, healthiest looking shoots to become your trunk.
You got two shoots because you left two buds on.
It could be two or three shoots that you would choose from, and you choose one of them. And you would top that at the fruiting wire.
And then you cut the other shoots off.
Cut the other shoots off. And then that growing season, so that's your third, during your third season, there'll be shoots growing from either side and you might get a little bit of fruit. But in that year three pruning season, you would then choose one of those shoots that sprouted off to be your fruiting cane for the next year, year four. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And you lay that down. So you don't get any crop really till the fourth year.
No.
In the UK, some places you can get three.
Year three, in that year where you kind of establish a trunk, it's not uncommon. If the vineyard is healthy, it's the vigor's good, and it could cope with, you don't get much, so it might be, you know, a few bunches of vines, then it's entirely possible to do it. But typically, year four.
Rith Finney, when they planted up, they used high graft.
Most vines that you plant and the ones that you would plant on your field will be low graft. So they come to you as about sort of 30, 40 centimetre plants, the majority of which is rootstock.
Mm-hmm.
About 10% is the there's the union between the variety and the rootstock,
yeah.
and then there's just a couple of buds, and that's yeah. it really. That's a low graft vine, and that's what you would plant. For establishment, it's 10 times better. High graft is what the nurseries will tell you was developed for infilling. So in vineyards, France, where things are heavily mechanized, you know, where you've got like a dead vine or a broken, yeah. damaged vine and you're replacing it, if you put a low graft in, a piece of machinery is going to miss it. But if you infill it with a high graft vine, it's at the fruiting wire. It's going to be serviced by whatever machinery it is you're running through, whether it's a sprayer or trimmer or whatever. So that's what they're developed for. So it's not good practice to plant high graft vines.
What did Beth Finney do that?
I don't know. Whoever the consultant at the time, whatever advice they got.
Yeah, I thought Mark thought he'd get a crop off earlier because of it. And in the end, he didn't. But
low graft's the way to go. That year three, you could get a small crop, but year four is typically
where
you're getting. Yeah.
Okay, so let's just recap. We've got our vines in the ground. We've got them established.
Yes.
And we've got them up to the wire. We've put our trellising in.
Yeah.
But before we talk about that, let's talk about the trellising itself. You keep saying in the UK we use a lot of metal trellising.
We do.
And in a long time ago, I remember talking to a company that actually makes trellising, and they said that the days of using wooden posts are no good because to make a wooden post last, you need to fill it up with fungicides and all sorts of stuff,
yeah.
and that leaches into the soil.
It does, yeah. And I think there was EU sort of directives, I think, several years ago, which meant that you couldn't use particular products that they were dipped in or treated with. They gave it
tantalization, that green colour.
Yeah, exactly, that tinge. Yeah, and whilst it looked aesthetically nice and stuff like that, it will decay, it will rot, it has a shorter shelf life than metal. We would advise you to go metal. If you do want to achieve that kind of, or soften the aesthetics, you can get your posts powder coated. There's several vineyards and producers that have them in, you know, green or some sort of brown, so it kind of blends in a bit more and looks, you know, a bit more kind of a bit more natural.
I presume they're made of steel, are they?
Yes.
And how long do they last? Because steel rusts.
Yeah, so you want to match what you're putting in terms of trellising with the life of the vineyard. What you don't want to do is put something in, because the vineyard will last 25 years plus, you know, if it's correctly looked after. And the materials that you use need to match that. Because if you're having to replace your trellising system twice throughout, obviously it's a significant cost, but it's also
quite a nightmare to do.
Yeah, yeah. So you want to kind of match it really. So most posts would last the life of that sort of 20-25 year lifespan of the vineyard. You can get hot dip galvanized posts, which are the kind of belt and brace gold standard, which would come with a 25 year guarantee. You want to be matching what you're putting with what the life expectancy of it is really.
I hadn't really thought about that, because old vines, hopefully about 50 plus years old. So someone's had to although there's a lot of bush vine old vines, isn't there?
Yeah, they won't be trellised, and it'd be dry climates as well.
Yeah.
We obviously have old vines in the UK in very small quantities, but we just don't have that vineyard that's got 50-year-old Pinot or 50-year-old Chard in it yet. It's a generation or two from here, really. But yeah, like you think of like Barossa and places like that have got 70-year plus vineyards, and again it's a different climate. You know, wood will last longer out there because it is drier and stuff compared to that sort of maritime climate here.
Okay, I think we'll wrap it up there. Yep. So we've got our vineyard now established.
Yep, got the trellising in.
Yep. What's the next step?
To manage it.
Manage it. Okay, yep. Let's talk about that next week.
Okay.
Cheers very much.
No worries.